So the word te in the first line, they don't. So who is this they? So Aranyakashipu, remember he was asking, said, if you have not received this instruction from your teachers, where have you gotten it? So Prahlad Maharaj is talking about his teachers, which is why you'll see that that's the focus of Srila Prabhupada's purport. So he's saying, they don't know. Not te vidu. My teachers, in other words, my teachers don't know. Translation. Persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life and who have therefore accepted as their leader or guru a similar blind man attached to external sense objects cannot understand that the goal of life is to return home back to Godhead and engage in the service of Lord Vishnu. As blind men guided by another blind man miss the right path and fall into a ditch, materially attached men led by another materially attached man are bound by the ropes of fruitive labor, which are made of very strong cords, and they continue again and again in materialistic life, suffering the threefold miseries. Purport. Since there must always be a difference of opinion between demons and devotees, Hiranyakashipu, when criticized by his son Prahlad Maharaj, should not have been surprised that Prahlad Maharaj differed from his way of life. Nonetheless, Hiranyakashipu was extremely angry and wanted to rebuke his son for deriding his teacher or spiritual master who had been born in the Brahmana family of the great Acharya, Sukra Acharya. So in other words, Hiranyakashipu was asking this question as a way of being angry at Prahlad for not taking the instructions of his teachers or for implying that his teachers had taught him that devotional service to Vishnu was what was most important. The word sukra means semen, and acharya refers to a teacher or guru. Hereditary gurus or spiritual masters have been accepted everywhere since time immemorial, but Prahlad Maharaja declined to accept such a seminal guru or take instruction from him. Does that mean that if you come in a line, if you're born in a line of gurus, you're automatically bogus? Yes? No? Okay. So what's wrong with gurus who are seminal or hereditary gurus? There's so much criticism of this. It's not by guna and karma. Guru should be by guna and karma. Not by janma. An actual guru is Shrotriya, one who has heard or received perfect knowledge through parampara, the disciplic succession. So such a person might also be in an Acharya family, right? We have a picture on the wall here. Whose picture on the wall here was born in an Acharya family? Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. So we're not rejecting. We don't say that if you're born in a family of Acharyas, that disqualifies you. What we're saying is that that's not enough. It's not sufficient. Just like Prabhupada says that if your father is a doctor, then naturally you're going to be hearing in the house all kinds of medical terms when you're growing up. And if you go to medical college, you'll have an advantage. But that's not enough. Just saying my father's a doctor, you know, if someone comes to do surgery on you and you say, what's your qualification? Well, my father's a doctor. That's not sufficient. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj did not recognize a seminal spiritual master. Such spiritual masters are not at all interested in Vishnu. Indeed, they are hopeful of material success. Bahir artha maninaha. The word bahi means external. Artha means interest. And manina means taking very seriously. So they're really very serious about the fact that my real interest is something external to me. Generally speaking, practically everyone is unaware of the spiritual world. The knowledge of the materialist is restricted within the 4 billion mile limit of this material world, which is in the dark portion of creation. They do not know that beyond the material world is a spiritual world. Unless one is a devotee of the Lord, one cannot understand the existence of the spiritual world. Gurus, teachers who are simply interested in this material world are described in this verse as andha, blind. Such blind men may lead many other blind followers without true knowledge of material conditions, but they are not accepted by devotees like Prahlad Maharaj. Such blind teachers, being interested in the external material world, are always bound by the strong ropes of material nature. Nate vidu swartigatim hi vishnam durasayaye bahirat tamanina andan yatandar upadinamanas te pishatantram udam nibadaha. Persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life and who have therefore accepted as their leader or guru a similar blind man attached to external sense objects cannot understand that the goal of life is to return home back to Godhead and engage in the service of Lord Vishnu. As blind men guided by another blind man miss the right path and fall into a ditch, materially attached men led by another materially attached man are bound by the ropes of fruit of labor, which are made of very strong cords, and they continue again and again in materialistic life, suffering the threefold miseries. That's interesting that Hiranyakashipu, who's such a powerful person, we can hardly estimate how powerful he was. If we think about materially powerful people that we know in the modern time, had this idea that you must have gotten this knowledge from somewhere. He said, have you learned this knowledge from your teachers or from somewhere else? Right? Where have you gotten this knowledge? So he has the idea you must have some authority. Interesting, huh? Even though he's a demon, he understands there's got to be an authority. And he himself received his benedictions from Lord Brahma. I mean, he felt it was by his own qualifications. But still, he was accepting some authority. We tend to be told in modern civilization by authorities that we shouldn't accept authorities. You know, we joke about the guru who says, you don't need a guru, everything's within. Or the person who writes a book about how you don't need books. But really, the modern authorities are doing very much that. They're saying, don't follow spiritual authority. Just follow your senses and logic, right? Aren't they teaching that? They're saying that if you follow the Shastra, if you follow God, if you follow the scriptures, if you follow religion, you're a foolish sentimentalist. Really intelligent people, they deduce everything by sensory observation and by logic. And Prabhupada was speaking on this verse in Mauritius. He made a kind of a side point, when he was talking about the spiritual world, and he was talking about how living entities are there on all the planets, even the sun and the moon. And one of the people in the audience said, how do you know that there's living entities on the moon? How do you know there's living entities on the sun? Prabhupada said, I've heard it from the Shastra. And the man said, but the Americans have gone to the moon. They put it on television. And Prabhupada said, do you want to accept the Americans or you want to accept Krishna? You're accepting somebody. So the propaganda is you're not accepting anybody. That's the propaganda. Your own senses and your own logical ability are your authority. You don't accept any outside authority. But who's telling us that that should be our authority? There's somebody telling us from the time we're little children in school and you go to the science museums and on the television that the way to real knowledge is through sense perception and logic. So guess what? They're being authorities. Prabhupada made the point to this man. He said, you haven't seen. You haven't gone to the moon and seen if there's anyone there or not. So you're accepting some authority. So this is a very embarrassing point for modern humans, that I'm accepting authority, that I don't have my own independent knowledge. Even in mathematics and science, you start with axioms from previous researchers. You don't go research everything. You accept certain things as true. When you start in mathematics, they teach you first axioms, correct? The distributive property, the associative property. Remember all those things? All those axioms you learned? Two parallel lines will never meet. I gave this example one time. I think it was in Soho. And somebody came, one scientist in the audience came up and argued with me afterwards. Said, how do you know two lines will never meet? Two parallel lines will never meet. He said, we know. I said, how do you know? Have you followed two parallel lines into infinity? How do you know what's at infinity? How do you know? You know, when they're talking about how far away the planets are, how do they check that? They take a meter stick and go up and check their calculations. How do they know they're right? They're making the assumption, first of all, they're making the assumption that the laws of physics and mathematics are known, which is a huge assumption, because every once in a while they throw out their paradigm and start all over again. It's not like they just add to their knowledge. They discard one paradigm and they accept a new one. So do they really know all the laws? None of their paradigms explain everything. They're looking for a unified field theory that will explain everything. Put it on a t-shirt. They can't find it. A certain way of looking at things explains some things. Another way of looking at things explains another things. So they don't know the complete laws even on this planet. There's so many things on this planet that they can't explain, that don't fit within their paradigm. For example, subtle phenomenon. How is it that some people can see the future? How is it that some people can see who performed a crime? That doesn't fit within their paradigm, that there's only gross matter. They can't explain it. You know, the Soviets and the USS, when it was the Soviet Union, they tried to harness paranormal abilities for military purposes. So they did a lot of experiments. I mean, some of them were horrible. Like they took some little baby bunnies on a submarine, and they kept the rabbit, the mother rabbit, in a lead room back in Russia. And then on the submarine, they killed the bunnies one after another. And the mother rabbit in this lead room in Russia, she would register brainwaves of distress every time one of her babies was killed in the submarine. So they were able to do all these experiments to show that things exist that can't be explained by the paradigm of you're this body and your personality is the brain and there's only gross matter. So they can't explain everything on this planet. And then they're assuming that the laws of physics and mathematics as they understand it on this planet operate the same way on the moon and on the sun and on Alpha Centauri and the ends of the universe. But they don't really know. They really don't know. And the point is they're following some authority. Some authority is telling them the laws of physics and mathematics operate the same way on Mars as they do on the Earth. And the scientists say, oh, yeah, okay. We'll base all of our calculations on that assumption. We're going to assume that personality is in the brain. Okay, we'll just accept it. And we'll base all of our studies, like modern psychology, psychotherapy, is based primarily on what? What are they doing? How are they curing mental diseases now? Through medicines, through chemicals. So why are they doing that activity? What's it based on? What assumption is it based on? That we're the body. That all there is the brain, that there's no mind. That's an assumption. In some cultures, they cure mental illness by exorcism. They say there's some entity that's attached to you that's ruining your sanity. So what assumption is that based on? That there's subtle matter. So how you act is based on certain assumptions that you hear from authority. So the scientists are there saying, oh, we don't need any authority, just go. But they're accepting authority. Everyone has to accept some authority. Nobody is able to just independently understand something. And if you're honest, you see, I'm accepting authority. I remember when I first came to the temple, not first came to the temple, but when I first visited the Chicago temple. And I don't know if you know, in the prison ministry, Chandrasekhar Prabhu, he was a brahmachari at the time. He sold me some spiritual sky incense. And he was trying to convince me to join the Hare Krishna movement. And I said, well, I really like Krishna consciousness. He said, why don't you join? I said, I don't want to accept any authority. You know, those were the days of don't trust anybody over 30 and be your own authority. Of course, we never thought that someday I'll be over 30. You know, that didn't cross our minds. So he's very interesting. He said to me, you're already accepting so many authorities. And I thought, oh, he knows. I thought it was a secret. It was one of my embarrassments. That I wasn't independent in my knowledge. And that I was forced to accept so many authorities that I couldn't prove if they were right or wrong. You know, if the scientists say in the beginning there was a chunk that exploded, how do you prove they're wrong or right? There's no way to prove it or disprove it. Very nice theory, can't be disproven. There's some researchers we were just studying at Bhaktivedanta College. That's the sociological view of ISKCON. One of the things we looked at is what factors allow a religious society to grow in numbers and to grow over time. So they were defining success as the religion exists for at least 100 years and has at least 100,000 members. And one of the criteria was it doesn't make any claims that can be disproven. Because if a religion makes claims that can be disproven, like, you know, our prophet's going to return in October 11, 2010. And then if he doesn't show up, then you can say that, of course, then they usually say, well, this happened, that happened. But people will leave if the religion makes empirical claims. He said, so religions that endure are ones that tend to make claims that you just have to accept. You can't judge if it's right or wrong. So that's like modern science. A lot of their claims, you can't judge if they're right or wrong. How do you know? You go to the museum and they'll say, the Alpha Centauri is so many light years away. Are you going to prove it or disprove it? You're going to travel there and find out? How can you prove the two parallel lines will never meet? And the scientist was arguing with me. I said, can you journey to the ends of the universe and see whether they do or not? How do you know? So once we have the honesty and humility to admit, I'm already accepting authority. I'm accepting authority all the time. And I have to accept authority. I can't function without accepting authority. So then the next question becomes, what would be the next question? Who should I accept as an authority? If I have to accept some authority, who should I accept? So here one should accept, it's said by the Shastra, one should accept authority who knows what is the real goal of life. Now who's going to know? Hey, we just got this little machine. So who's going to know how to operate it? The manufacturer. Correct? It has an instruction manual. This is how you operate it. And you can say, well, we didn't come with an instruction manual. I've seen well over 50 babies been born. None of them popped out with an instruction manual that I could see. So people may think, well, where's the instruction manual? But there is one. And that one was given at the beginning of creation. This is how the world works. This is how your body works. This is how the world works. This is who you are. This is how to achieve the goal of life. You know, and whenever there's no more copies available, then some incarnation, yadaya dahi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharacha bhutinama dharmasya tadatmanam srajamyaham, comes in again and teaches. Here it is, you know, you lost all the copies, the hard disk got erased or something. People perverted it. Comes and reestablishes. This is the original dharma. This is the original sanatan dharma. So first of all, you want to look for someone who claims, at least makes a claim, that their authority is coming from an eternal source. That's the first thing. Because if the authority is manufactured authority, then it's not going to be perfect. It's going to have a lot of guesswork in it. Well, maybe it's like this, maybe it's like this. So far we've seen it's like this. Like the scientists, they actually define a scientific truth as something that we haven't yet proved false. That's their definition. They'll say, by definition, scientific knowledge can never be called true. It can only be said that so far we haven't proved it false. So immediately you can understand that that's not an authority. If I say, is the knowledge you're teaching me true? And you say, no, by definition, the knowledge I'm teaching you cannot be true. It's only that so far we haven't proved it false. That immediately you can understand. That's not a source of authority. So you want to look for someone who's at least claiming that what I'm teaching is true. Hey, could you imagine buying a map and the person who sells you the map says, well, some of these roads might be right, but we're not really sure which ones. We don't know which of the roads on the map are actually the way they are and which ones aren't. We're pretty sure that this map has some percentage of truth, but we're not sure how much. And that's all empirical knowledge is like that. You know, I've seen a swan and a swan and a swan, and they were all white. So I say swans are white. This actually happened in science, by the way. I say swans are white. But I didn't go to Australia yet and see the black swans. So I'm not even sure if you say, well, how sure are you that swans are white? I can't even give you the percentage. Does that make sense? I can't even say I'm 90% sure. Like I wanted to do research on Gurukulis for my doctoral thesis. And my problem was we couldn't figure out how many there were. There's no count. So if I interviewed 200 people, what percentage of the Gurukulis was I getting? Nobody knew. So I couldn't do the research. So the scientists don't know. What percentage of truth do I have? Am I giving you something that's 5% accurate, 90% accurate? So who would buy such a map? So at least somebody you want who claims this is an accurate map. Start off who's claiming that they're giving you truth. So that narrows it down considerably. Then you're narrowed down to generally to religions. Or to people who claim they have some independent vision and they've seen the whole truth. And then the next question you ask is, well, on what basis are you making this claim? What's your basis? Well, I went out in the desert and I fasted for 20 days and I had a vision. Well, okay. That's not very solid. Or here, a hereditary guru. Well, my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, he knew the truth. And what's your claim? Well, that's I'm in the family of people who knew the truth. Have you heard the truth? Have they been teaching the truth? I don't know, but I'm just in the family. So that's not enough. Now, what's your claim? So claim has to be it came from God. It came from God, and I've heard it from somebody who's heard it from somebody who's heard it from God. That's, again, someone has to at least be making that claim. And then you want to look at the knowledge and see if it's consistent, if it's logically consistent. I mean, if you're saying God is loving, God is kind, but, you know, if you don't believe in him and say, Lord, I believe in you, he makes you burn for eternity. That's not a logically consistent philosophy. It doesn't make any sense. Kind people don't do that. Even ordinary people don't do that. Even animals don't do that to their children. You know, if the little tiger cub is naughty, the mother tiger doesn't kill the cub. She may swat the cub, but she doesn't kill it. She doesn't torture it. What to speak of torturing it for eternity? Even such a cruel animal like a tiger doesn't raise its young like that. In our human society, if someone does that to their children, we put them in jail. We don't think they're a nice person. So there has to be, the philosophy they're presenting as truth has to have some consistency. If it's presenting the complete whole, it has to be a complete truth. And then you have to see what is the result of people who seriously take up the process. Like here, how do you know if a blind people, if they're following another blind person, says they'll end up in a ditch? You see, what's the result of following the materialistic scientists? You know, when I was a little girl, it was really the height of the idea that we're going to live through science and technology. They had advertisements, better living through chemistry. Could you imagine anyone advertising that today? And that was their advertisement, better living through chemistry. And the green movement really started when I was a teenager. I went on protest marches for the ecology and the environment. But that was considered very socially disruptive. The propaganda was, we're going to all become happy through modern science. There was a TV show called Star Trek where they didn't eat regular food. The computer synthesized a little pill and you just put water on it. And that was wonderful. Now, this concept that we won't have to grow food anymore, we'll just eat chemicals. And people were saying, this will be wonderful advancement. We'll come to a new age. And what have we seen? We've seen that by eating a bunch of chemicals and putting chemicals in our food, we're all becoming sick. Right? So you have to judge by the result. If someone says this is truth, if someone says this is a map, this is a proper map, and I follow the map and I end up in the river, right? Here's how to get to Bhaktivedanta Manor. Instead of getting Bhaktivedanta Manor, I get in the dangerous part of town. Has that ever happened to you? Have you ever gotten directions and you ended up in a part of town? You went, whoops. Better get out of here fast. And look around and say, where am I? So you see the result. You have to see what is the fruit. Now, you look at people who followed the system. I mean, we do this for an ordinary university, right? What's the basis of the professors? Where do they get their knowledge? Do they have degrees? Have they learned from someone else? And then every school advertises their graduates. They advertise their professors, and they advertise their graduates. They don't say, well, here's a professor, just his father's a professor. He's got a degree from such and such institution, and that institution has to be reputable, and here's what our graduates are doing. And nobody would go to Harvard Business School if they said, our graduates are all bums. You know, our graduates are all street people bums. That's one of the main questions that you ask. Of course, not everybody in Harvard or not everybody in Oxford is achieving the fruit. Some students are more serious than others. That's always understood. One doesn't expect everyone who claims to be following truth to be manifesting the fruits of truth. But at least those who are serious, the serious students. So you expect that the serious students in the university, if they follow their program and they get good grades and they graduate, that they'll exemplify the principles of the university. So another way you look at is, if someone's following this authority, are they achieving the destination? Right? Isn't that how we judge things in general? When I was waiting in the unbelievably long queue to enter this country, there were people ahead of me who were talking about how they went on some cruise somewhere. And they're telling their friends, I never had so much fun in my life. You should also go on this cruise. Isn't that how we judge things? Did people get the results as advertised? That's all the testimonials, you know. I took this medicine and I, you know, became 20 years younger within a week. And they have their pictures, their before and after pictures. And right? So you want to look at who's following the process, who's really following the process, what's the before and after pictures. One devotee just posted some pictures of devotees before they were devotees. Yeah. Like we have the pictures from the Sandi Panimuni school in Vrindavan, the before and after. You know, the slum kids and they're malnourished, and then the after pictures, they have nice tilak and they're shining and they're neat and clean. So that's your main claim of truth. You know, the main way you know, we're selling peach trees. Do peaches grow on them? I mean, that's the ultimate test. So, okay, I need an authority. Now I have a way of testing who's an authority. Now what? Now my next question is going to be, how do I follow that authority? What's my process of following that authority? So what many people do is, first of all, many people don't even realize they need an authority. They accept authority without even understanding they're accepting authority, without even thinking about who am I, like this man who was talking to Prabhupada. Prabhupada kept saying, so you're accepting the Americans and we're accepting the Shastra. It was hard for the man to understand he was accepting authority. He kept saying, but they told everybody they went. And Prabhupada said, so you're believing them. It took him at least 10 minutes to get that Prabhupada was saying, hey, you don't know whether or not this is true. You're just following. So first we understand that I don't know very much, and I'm really hearing from authorities who I'm trusting. Then I find someone who I feel pretty confident that this is a genuine authority, then what do I do? What do I do? I follow. Now, it's really interesting how we're hesitant to do this with spiritual authority. You know, somebody will say, how can you bow down to a spiritual master? How can you just say, okay, I'm going to follow the Shastra? But they're following so many, blindly, blindly. Buy this product, it will do this. Oh, okay. Without, you know, just on the basis of some testimonials of somebody. Do this thing, it will make you happy. Has it made other people happy? No, but I'll be the exception, you know. How else are you going to really make an experiment unless you follow, if you half follow? Well, I'll follow some things. I won't follow the other things. So many times people ask me questions, and my answer is, what does it say in the Shastra? Should I do this? Should I do that? Well, what does it say in the Shastra? It's the first place you look. Is there some consistent instruction given in the Shastra? And you might find, well, the Shastra gives different instructions, different circumstances. Then, okay, well, what does your guru say? What do the sadhus do? How do they exemplify the Shastra? And this should be the basis for our actions. Guru, sadhu, and Shastra. The little things and the big things. Now, there may not be an instruction in Shastra for every little detail of our life. Like if someone asked me a question yesterday, what should she do? And I said, your question, there's no answer in Shastra. And the reason there was no answer in Shastra is she was in an unshastric circumstance. She was in an adharmic circumstance. The very basis of her circumstance was adharmic. Therefore, there was no instruction from the Shastra on how to deal with such a situation. It didn't make sense from a Shastric point of view. I don't want to say what it is because I'll offend some people in the room. So sometimes Shastra doesn't give you a very specific guideline, but then it gives you principles. It gives you a general principle. So I said to her, well, the principle should be, in which situation do you feel you could best advance your Krishna consciousness? In which situation would you be able to wholeheartedly say, I'm going to offer this to Krishna? Because I said, really, neither of your choices are anything that's prescribed in the Shastra. So then you look at principles. You look at what have the sadhus done. And really, at every moment of our life, we're following some basic assumption. If I'm distressed about something, the cure that I will do for my distress is based on some idea of reality. Like if someone's depressed, do they take Prozac? Do they take St. John's wort? Do they go to an exorcist? Do they sit down and chant? Do they go to an Ayurvedic doctor? Do they have somebody give them an oil massage? You know, what do they do? Is based on what their ideas of reality are. And that's true all the time. We're constantly seeking for truth and pleasure and happiness. And everything we do is based on some idea of what is true. We can therefore also understand whether or not we've really accepted Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra by what we do. Like Prabhupada said, don't accept a guru as a fashion. So not only don't accept a bogus guru, but don't accept a guru just to be one of the crowd. You know, I've accepted a guru so I can get my spiritual name in the Hare Krishna movement. So if somebody says, of course the Gurukulis already have a spiritual name. And one Gurukuli was just telling me in Radhadesh, said whenever I go to India, one of the first questions other devotees ask me is, well, who's your guru? And if I say, well, I don't really have one yet. And they say, well, who are you aspiring to? Well, I'm not really sure yet. He said immediately, then I have no status. So one may accept a guru just for social status, or just to say, here's my guru. See this picture of my guru? Right here, this is my guru. But who we really follow is shown by our behavior. Our behavior is the real measure of what we believe to be true. Because I'm going to do things that I think will give me happiness. So if I say, well, yeah, Shastra says this, and Prabhupada says this, and the Acharyas have said that, but, you know, I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to figure it out myself. So that's based on some idea of what's real. Therefore, we say advancement of Krishna consciousness is an advancement of faith. As my faith increases, as I believe more and more and more that Gurus, Sadhu, and Shastra really do know what they're talking about, I actually have an accurate instruction manual. As my faith increases that my instruction manual is accurate, then I apply myself to the process more and more and more and more and more. And when I have full faith, then I'm at the platform of purity. Now, this faith isn't just something intellectual. It isn't just like I believe. As I say, it's something that I really believe. It's something that I know. This is true. So how does our faith increase? By hearing. So we know all this, right? You all know this standard Hare Krishna philosophy. But that's how we do it. By hearing, by associating with people who have more faith than we have, who are following better than we're following, and who we see are getting the fruits. Not just who are following externally, Niyamagraha. I mean, it could be somebody who's just stricter than we are in the externals. But somebody who really, they've internally in their heart, they have faith, and they're starting to taste the fruits of bhakti. They're starting to experience bhakti. We associate with them and we find out, oh, they're following this process and they're experiencing something wonderful and they're not losing out. A lot of the reason we don't follow is we're afraid. If I really surrender myself to this authority, then, you know, who knows what will happen? Because we followed so many blind authorities in the past and fallen into so many ditches. And so we're a little bit afraid. So we associate with those who are more advanced. We hear. And we practically engage in the process up to the level of our current faith. And we see what happens. What actually happens? Do I gain knowledge? Do I start to see things as they are? Do we start having, you know, as we say, realizations, epiphanies? Do you start having like, oh, there really are three modes of material nature? Wow, God really is a person. Oh, the law of karma actually is working, even in my life. Huh, I just got back something I gave out. Look at that. You start seeing the truth in your own life. And one should come to the point, one should start coming to the point of feeling spiritually joyful, which is a different qualitative experience than material happiness. Material happiness comes and goes. Sometimes the mind is happy, sometimes the mind is sad, sometimes the body is energetic, sometimes the body is tired. But we should be experiencing at least sometimes, a little bit, at least sometimes, a little bit, a kind of happiness that's not like material happiness, where you feel like the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge as a different quality. It feels like something authentic. Material happiness is, it's never really authentic. And we should start to develop good qualities, too. We should start to become kind, an expert, poetic even, free from material hankerings. We should start to free from feelings of possessiveness, not eating too much. These qualities should start manifesting in us. So as this happens, then our faith will increase. Then we'll think, yeah, I must be on the... Like, how do you know someone gave you the right directions? How do you know you have a right map? You start having signposts, right? There starts being signs. Central London, so many miles. Okay, that's a signpost. Then as you get really closer, you start seeing parts of the city. Okay, I must be getting to my destination. And that's included in the instructions. What are the signposts? So we should, first of all, have the honesty, the humility to admit, I'm already following authority. I'm already following authority. It's not that if I don't follow Shastra and I don't follow Srila Prabhupada, that I'm not accepting any authority. I'm immediately accepting some other authority. have to accept. Even Hiranyakashipu understood that. He said, whose authority are you following? He understood that. So I must be following some authority. Let me, whose authority am I following? What's the basis of my faith in that authority? Why do I have faith in that authority? And if I say I have faith in Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, am I doing that? And am I doing that deeply? Or do I read something in the Shastra and say, whoa, I can't do that? I was speaking to a devotee recently who was horribly, before she was a devotee, was horribly, horribly mistreated and abused by her family members. And she said to me, I don't want to forgive. So do we read something in the Shastra and say, no, I don't want to do that. That's not the path I want. No. Prabhupada said something, you read something in Prabhupada's purport, you go, oh, do I have to do that? So we can examine, to what extent am I actually following? And then start looking in our life. Are there, to whatever extent I am following, am I seeing the symptoms that are described in the Shastra? And this is something we should be examining regularly. Not just that we're going on in the process, you know, without thoughtfulness, without introspection. One should be an introspective sage. Prabhupada says one should become a philosopher. So thank you very much. Questions, comments? We'll take just a couple minutes and then we have this wonderful show. You've all been looking at the screen the whole time and probably wondering when I was going to stop talking so you could see the really exciting thing.